Thank you, listeners, and welcome you back to Dairy Science Digest. This is the second season, second edition, and today we're sharing the air with Professor Mike Coffey, and he's from the United Kingdom, specifically in Scotland, is going to tell us all about his paper that's in press right now at the Journal of Dairy Science, Predicting Pregnancy Status, using an MIR spec and focusing in on, can we look at dairy cattle milk and determine if she is pregnant? So, Doc, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, yeah. My name's Mike Coffey, and I look after the animal breeding and genomics team at Scotland's Rural College here in Edinburgh. And I'm also responsible for the evaluation unit that calculates the national breeding values for dairy, beef, sheep, pigs, and goats.
Very good. And so as I was reviewing your article, it's many pages of lots of mathematical models. Could you simplify it down for me a little bit? What were the objectives of your research efforts?
Okay, it's a very specific question we were looking at here. It's important to understand that we were not looking at detecting when a cow became pregnant, but more importantly, we were detecting a cow that became unpregnant. So these are cows that have held to insemination, and then some months further down the line have lost that pregnancy. And we're looking to see if we can detect that change of status of the cow in her milk. You've already indicated it's using mid-infrared spectral data. That's a byproduct of routine milk recording. But in this particular case, we went a step further and we used deep learning.
Deep learning, yes. And so I guess expanding a little bit more on the MIR, so that is looking at the wavelengths in it. So you're shooting the wavelengths through the milk sample, right? And and collecting back the reflectance, is that correct?
Yeah, it's either the reflectance or the absorbance, but it doesn't matter because one is just one minus the other.
Mm-hmm. And so as you're doing that, is that something that you foresee the dairy producer, is that something that they could ultimately do in their parlor in the future?
Yeah, I mean, obviously at the moment, it's part of routine milk recording. And that's the way that the DHIA and all the others do fat and protein percent testing using industrial scale machines where they put millions of samples through every month. And the spectral data is used to predict fat and protein percent. What happens is we retain it in a separate computer, and we then see whether we can predict other things from it. Now, clearly, if we can predict pregnancy and other diseases and maybe yonis in the future, things like that, then we can repurpose the spectral data that's already been collected for one thing and repurpose it for using it for doing lots of other things. Now, clearly, at some point in the future, the technology that's at the heart of these industrial scale machines potentially could be miniaturized and might even be part of the milk recording apparatus, whereby the milk would be analyzed through one of these machines in the flow. I know a lot of companies have been trying to do this for many, many years. And ultimately, when they succeed, you can imagine a spectrophotometer measuring the spectra in the milk and then another computer making predictions about if the cow's pregnant, she's got this disease or that disease or lame, or how much feed intake she's had, how much methane she's produced, lots of things like that in real time.
Wow. Wouldn't that be fascinating? The content that you could gain from each individual animal would just be really impactful in the ability to make accurate culling decisions and whatnot. So you referred to deep learning. Can you expand a little bit on what is deep learning?
Okay, so deep learning is just a special branch of machine learning. Everyone's heard of artificial intelligence and machine learning. It's used by Google, Facebook, and Twitter, and all those. Specifically, facial recognition. You know, every time you put a photograph up on Facebook and say, yeah, here's me and my family, and you tag all their names, well, the algorithms behind are learning how to recognize people from their images. And deep learning is a method which is a branch of machine learning, and it uses what is called convolutional neural networks. So it's sub-layers of learning that learn off each other. It's quite a complicated area, but essentially each layer learns off the next layer and the previous layer, and it improves the learning process of the algorithm to be able to say, here's a load of data to start with, and it's one or zero, yes or no, pregnant or non-pregnant. And the neural networks learn how to do that. And in the end, you have a model and you give it a piece of information and it will say yes or no, one or zero, pregnant or not pregnant.
Wonderful. And as I was reading through your paper, it was talking about the genetic algorithm or the GA1 or GA2. And so in my mind, to simplify it for me, I was imagining those are different generations of data. And so they would learn from each other and then ultimately become a very robust or therefore reliable equation that would then be more likely to accurately determine or detect the change in pregnancy status. So just super fascinating. And I guess if I could pause for just a moment and thank you for your interest in applying this towards dairy, right? Because, you know, you gave all these different inferences about where it's happening in society and whatnot, but mm-hmm. It takes someone like you to bring it to our industry and help benefit the dairy industry. So just thank you for doing that, because I think it will ultimately have a huge impact on our industry. So I can just imagine folks listening right now, what they really want to know is, what does it work? What can you tell us about reliability? And is it sometimes false positive, false negative, or sensitivity? All those terms. Tell us what you learned.
Okay. Does it work? Yes, it does work. And it works better in some herds than others, interestingly. And we're currently undertaking a field trial with our national milk records company. That's one of the major milk recording companies in the UK. And we're making predictions about individual cows. And then they're taking them out to the farm, and a vet's going to visit the farm to see how good our predictions are. Now, as I say, we've actually identified already by looking at existing data that it works better in some herds than it does in others. At the moment, we're trying to investigate and find out what the characteristics of the herds where it works really well are, because what we might do in the first instance is make the service available only in those herds. And you're correct. The point there is that what we don't want to do is predict that 50 of these cows are not pregnant, when in fact only two of them are not pregnant. And so we're trying to refine that process. The accuracy that we've got for predicting unpregnancy, over 90%.
That's wonderful. That's really incredible. And so in glancing, and I know this is just speculation and not published, but what's different about the herds? What do you think is going to be the issue?
Yeah, I think initial analysis indicates it may be something to do with the way they mobilize body fat in support of lactation. Mm-hmm. So these are extremely high yielding herds. They have a lot of body tissue mobilization, and that process may be interfering with the signal that we're getting for pregnancy.
I see.
It's so, early stages yet.
Yeah. So that fatty acid in the milk. I see. Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah. Oh, it's so cool. And so hypothetically, this is something that when you have 3 million milk samples and you were analyzing them, that is throughout lactation, right? Can this be used as a screening tool to determine if or when she loses that pregnancy, say an aborted 120 days in or something like that?
Yeah, that's precisely what the organization we're working with, National Milk Records, they wanted it specifically to catch cows who lost their pregnancies late in lactation. Because in the UK, particularly for some herds, that's very expensive. The cow's not pregnant at the wrong time of year, then it can often be a few months before the cow actually shows signs of oestrus again. And if the farmer's not really concentrating hard, he can miss her. And then she's lost it. She's maybe 6 or 7 months into lactation and it's too late to get her pregnant again. And she becomes a cull.
Yeah, too far gone. Yeah.
Too far gone. Yeah.
Can't get reset.
Yeah.
Oh, that's that would be hugely helpful. You know, having those days in calf, that would be incredibly helpful.
Yeah.
To know that. What else should we know about your modeling?
Well, as I say, we're doing it on an ongoing basis. We're looking at other phenotypes that we might predict from the spectral data. If you think about any biological action in the cow could well leave a signal in the milk. And the similarity is other areas where, for example, they've trained dogs to smell people that have disease. And that's because the disease creates chemicals in the blood that comes out in the sweat, which dogs can be trained to scent, to smell. And it's exactly the same principle, that any physiological action in the cow may leave a signal in the milk. And the question is, can we find it? Can we detect that signal by excluding all the other signals, all the other noise that's in there? And diseases that we're very interested in going forward would be yonis, methane emissions, because the production of methane in the cow's rumen leaves a signal in the milk. We think we might be able to predict feed intake from milk spectral data, all with varying degrees of accuracy. Mm-hmm. But given that these things are very difficult to measure anyway, mm-hmm. Even having it at 80% accuracy would give us a lot more information than we currently have. The second most important point about this is taking of the sample is already taken, and it's non-invasive. It's a routine milk sample from a cow. You don't touch the cow in any way. You take it out of the milking apparatus. It's done routinely. And I like to think of these new phenotypes as phrenotype.
That's wonderful. I love that. Over in Scotland, what percentage of the herds participate in milk testing on a monthly basis?
Okay, so it's not just Scotland, it's the whole of the UK.
Okay.
And it's around about half of all cows.
Being able to detect yonis, it would be so curious to identify that, because that concept of the iceberg effect, where she's not actively shedding, and so it's just impossible to try to find her, that would be really fascinating in seeing how that changes or impacts the milk. The first thing that comes into my mind is this, the social side of this. How do we utilize this information as dairy producers to benefit our herd and not allow it to go out of control on the social society side, saying, well, you're allowing these animals with all these physiological changes to generate milk for us. Is this milk safe? You know, where's that fine line, and how do we discuss this with consumers once we begin to adopt this technology?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And, you know, what we're doing is kind of in a data-wise, computing-wise, we're sniffing the milk. Mm-hmm. And we're looking to see whether there's a signal that we can detect. Now, clearly, the people consuming the milk are saying, oh, does that mean a cow, you know, that's got mastitis or is lame produces milk routinely? Well, the answer is yes, because it doesn't put anything of any detriment into the milk. And of course, in the UK, I suspect in the US mostly, the milk is pasteurized. So it's cleaned of any infectious material. The worst that can happen is that you can have milk that's got a slightly altered fatty acid content or more protein than you expected. But neither of those things are negative. Yeah. It's quite similar, for example, to farmers that feed carrots to cows. Mm-hmm. It's a good way of scooping up waste, you know, waste carrots that otherwise would go into landfill, go into a dairy cow, and that they get processed in the rumen to produce milk. And of course, if you feed the cows too much carrot, the milk goes a little bit orange. Now, it's not going to hurt anybody. It's just not really a good selling point. So farmers are good at trolling that, you know?
Right.
So there's lots of things about milk. It's not a homogenous product that's the same every day of the year. It's a biological product that's produced from grass that's growing in different ways, from wheat that's growing in different ways, different parts of the country, different soil characteristics. So, you know, it's a living product, milk. Highly nutritious. It's an excellent product.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you for clarifying that, because golly, it seems like every tool and technology that we use in our toolbox, we have to describe and explain and be able to articulate how and why this is not only beneficial to dairy, but also beneficial to the consumer. And I believe that it is. And so are there any other topics that we've missed in our discussion that you'd like to like to include?
I don't think there are any we've missed. I think the important thing that's come out here is that dairy farmers are very, very keen to improve all the while. And this is a technology that has met with great acceptance by the farmers that I've spoken to. Very, very keen to deploy this, principally because it's non-invasive. And also because they can see the opportunities of improving other things like Yonis. In the UK, we're doing a field trial at the moment on TB. Mm-hmm. So TB testing, which is, you know, a disease that costs farmers a lot of money, and it has high social impact on farmers. If they have an outbreak of TB, it can be devastating for the herd. So farmers try to avoid it at all costs, and we're looking at ways of being able to help them avoid it by using milk samples to help them manage that process. Clearly, there's lots of other things of societal interest like methane and lameness and feed intake and all those things. They'll come in good time. But the most important thing for any consumers listening is that farmers are very, very keen to produce a nutritious product that is not at the expense of the cow. Now, I don't think a lot of people realize that a lot of dairy farmers spend more time with their cows than they do with their family.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. That is so true.
And they have a very keen interest in making sure that they're in good condition, they're looked after well, because a good conditioned cow that's looked after well will produce lots of milk and everyone's happy.
Everyone. Well, Mike, this has been very informative, and I want to thank you for your time, and I want to thank the listeners. I applaud you for taking time out of your day, listening, and the opportunity to learn how this technology could help revolutionize the collection of information in your herd. And so this has been the second edition of the second season, learning about how we can use MIR to better understand our herd. So the Journal of Dairy Science comes straight to your ears through this podcast, and it's provided to you by your University of Missouri dairy team. Be sure to like, subscribe to get future editions straight to your cell phone. This is Reagan Brule with Dairy Science Digest, and I hope you have a great day.